This episode of the Energy Stoners Cafe is sponsored by the Black Arts Matter Network, blackartsmatter.net. Welcome to the Energy Stoners Cafe. My name is Toni Quest, and I'm really happy that you're here. I like to interview the most interesting people I can find on the planet. So grab a cup of coffee, sit down, relax, and listen. You're going to find that these guests are so intriguing, you'll wonder why you didn't know about them before. Hi, everybody. Welcome back to the Energy Stoners Cafe. Once again, we have a wonderful guest for you. Tonight, we're going to be talking again to our resident expert, Dr. Robert Clark from Georgia. He has a practice called Center for Primary Care, and it's located in the Augusta, Georgia area. Bob, welcome back to the show. Dr. Clark, we're so happy to have you. I'll call you both names.
Thank you. Thank you for having me. I enjoy coming on the show. It's a lot of fun.
We love having you. We really do. Because you really take a lot of stress off of us, especially our audience, with regard to this pandemic. Now, I don't even know what to call it. I don't think we can call it post-pandemic. I was in my mind calling it the intra-pandemic. What's going on right now?
Well, we're still in the pandemic. Pandemic by definition is across the world, right? And so we are still having infections, and yes, we're fully still in the pandemic. Just because that people's activities doesn't necessarily correspond to pandemic doesn't mean that the virus says, okay, I'm done, right? Mm-hmm. It doesn't work that way.
Yeah.
But yes, we're still in a pandemic, but we're very fortunate in this country that, you know, we have a vaccine. And so you're in a different stage in the pandemic as far as therapy and treatment is concerned, in that when we first started having our conversations, you know, we really didn't have any treatment, right? We're talking about mainly about testing, identifying people, mask wearing, prevention, those kind of things. And so we're still there, but we have a highly effective treatment, which is vaccines. And so that really kind of helps in further down the line in the pandemic in controlling things, because you have actually a therapy that's highly effective and always been effective from viruses, is having a vaccine.
Yes, and I know if a lot of people in certain generations can look at their left or right shoulder and they can see that they have received a vaccine before, but it was so long ago you might have forgotten. There's like a tiny little dime-sized scar that people, baby boomers, most, I'd say 99% of baby boomers have on their shoulders.
Absolutely. Yeah. I have the same thing. I remember that, you know, lining up in school and you got to go get that shot because that, you know, everyone got the shot. I have that same scar on my shoulder. Sure. Absolutely.
It's interesting how the mindset has changed. I think, we were all, and I'll say this for myself, I was too young to really understand why. I just didn't want to get a shot because I was a little kid. I do remember that shot not hurting at all. That's what I remember about it. But getting more serious about this, you know, where do we really stand? I mean, I think from a global perspective, from a national perspective, from a community perspective, with regard to COVID-19 today?
First, you have to understand is the virus, and I've said this before to your audiences, is that the virus is a living thing. And so it wants to survive. And so it's always going to mutate. And so that's what we're dealing with now, is the mutations. And I think that's what people are getting kind of concerned about, particularly the Delta variant. They've changed the definitions. They changed the numbers now. They used to be the Delta variant, used to be the B.1.617.2. Now they've went to the alphanumeric. But the Delta variant is a progression of the virus from when we first started. So when we first started, the virus would infect people, I think, one in every three people. And that's, if one person got sick, they would generally infect almost up to three people.
Wow.
Now, if you had the Delta variant, it would be one in six. Because the virus wants to promote itself. It wants to survive. And so it will always try its best to mutate to improve its chances of survival. And so it's imperative, if we want to not have to talk about COVID anymore, that people get vaccinated. And we're fortunate in this country that we have some really highly effective vaccines. The mRNA vaccines are great. The Novavax one that's coming out is probably going to be a great booster. I think I've said that before. You just need to get vaccinated because it's not going to go away unless you get vaccinated.
Do you have a preference as to which one of the vaccines that people talk about?
Well, in this country, you would definitely want to get the mRNA. So those would be the Pfizer or the Moderna. Those would be the ones that you really want to get. The Johnson & Johnson is a good one if you have a really good immune system. But some studies have shown this might not be as effective against the Delta variants as the mRNAs. The Novavax one it seems to be doing pretty good.
And there's a booster we're supposed to get in September. That's what I heard. Is that true?
We do not know. And so the immune system is very complicated. You have to look at it from a policy standpoint versus an individual. I'm a clinician, so I treat patients. So I have to look at policies and then determine the individual person, whether they is right for them or not. So from a policy standpoint, they probably won't. I don't expect them to come out with a booster in the fall. I just don't see it. I think they just need to immunize as many people as they can. Mm-hmm. That being said, the reason why they're considering a booster, just for full disclosure, is because of something that's kind of complicated. It's called the booster effect of a three shot. So how do I put it? So let's say we're going to compare your immune system to a tree, since you're talking about walking in the forest, right? So so if you get a COVID infection, your immune response will be like a maple tree. It'll be that tall of an immune response. But if you get the vaccine, your immune response will be like a big pine tree. Okay?
Uh-huh.
So it's higher. It's much more higher than a person who got just the COVID infection. Now, if you are a person who's had COVID and then you get the vaccine, then your immune response will be like a sequoia tree, a redwood tree.
Wow.
And so persons who've gotten an infection and then they get immunized, they don't ever have to ever worry about a variant, because they've had such a great immune response. And so that's why the push is for everyone to get vaccinated, whether you got the COVID infection in the past or not, because your immune status will wane after about 6 months to 8 months after you've had the infection. So you're going to need that boost.
I see that there are a lot of people who have had COVID, had suffered from COVID, and some of them seem so cavalier about not getting vaccinated. They think they've got herd immunity. They're just using the word that they heard. And then and I remember explaining to a friend of mine, it doesn't mean that you shouldn't get the vaccine. And, you know, she just, no mask. She says, I have herd immunity. I don't have to do anything.
And so what you have to understand is that, okay, so let's suppose you're like a majority of Americans who got the infection between December and January.
Mm-hmm.
That's where a lot of people got infected at that time. And so you got infected with the Delta variant. I mean, not the Alpha variant.
Mm-hmm.
But the Delta variant, your immune system doesn't recognize that. So that means you'll get it again.
Mm-hmm.
So that means is that if you got infected in January, your immune system will wear out somewhere around June to August. And that's right when the Delta variant will be peaking in the United States, as it's just the number one infection now in the United States. It'll start peaking into the fall and you will get sick. And so that's the reality. Just because you've had the infection doesn't mean you're going to have immunity, and your immune system is not a great response to a natural occurring infection for coronaviruses. It's very variable to people. One person can have a great immune response. One will have a terrible immune response. And there's no test that we could tell who's going to have a better immune response or not. And there's no test to say that, oh, I'm healthy, I have a better immune response. No, It's very variable. And so that's why you want to even the playing field of immune responses by getting everyone immunized. So thereby, it's much more consistent. So back to my analogy, you want everyone's immune response to be that pine tree. You don't want people to be a maple tree, some a shrub, some a little tree, some a bush. You don't want that. You want everyone to be a pine tree. So to keep their immune response, because that we know helps out everybody.
It just seems I feel a little annoyed at people that refuse the vaccination because they have They have some idea in their mind that it's not a good thing. I'm just going to say it like that. But yet it seems that the people among us that do get the vaccination, that suffer like minor symptoms for a very short amount of time, it's like we're protecting them as they walk around continuing to infect us. I mean, I wish that someone explained that to some people about that.
I think the issue is that a lot of people have a lot of misconceptions about how their body works. Mm-hmm. So they get their information by Facebook and headlines and not understanding that the body is very complicated and you need to really listen to the people who really have studied this their entire life, and that's what they do. So I have lots of patients who I'm in a state whose vaccination rate is low, right? You're in a state that whose total vaccination rate is much higher.
Yeah.
Your state, in New York, I think is running around, 55% of the population is fully vaccinated. My state is 37% fully vaccinated. So I got a lot of people running around who don't want to get vaccinated. And I think you just have to give them the facts and the information, and hopefully they make wise choices. And if they don't, then they're going to get sick and they're going to have the long hauler syndrome, which is much more problematic than death.
I mean, I've heard people that are in the wellness field that aren't getting vaccinated, and they say that they believe that the vaccine's going to affect their RNA, their DNA, you know, their HR, whatever that is.
Yeah, and those are people who don't understand the biology. And so a messenger RNA, as I said before, is a sticky note, right? It doesn't stay around. It's only there for about 72 hours, and then it's gone. Messenger RNA is throughout your whole body. Your body utilizes it all the time. And it doesn't change who you are. It doesn't change anything. And the vaccine only stays in your muscle tissue in the arm that they give you the shot in. It actually doesn't even go in your whole body. So I think they're just not understanding how biology truly works. And once you understand that the vaccine only stays in your body for 72 hours, your immune system then remembers that. You get the booster in order for you to remember, so your body can remember it again. And then remembers it, locks it in. And that's why we do it this way. And to get a third shot, some of your viewers might read about the Cuban vaccine, which is they actually came out with a 3 vaccine. And their reasoning is that they're trying to mimic a person who's had COVID with the vaccine. That's why they give a 3 shot.
How's that working out for them?
We're going to find out. That's waiting on the studies. Everyone's waiting, but that's what their thought process is. So we'll see. You got to get the vaccine. And that's the only thing I can say to people, because otherwise it's going to mutate more and more and be a lot more contagious for the world.
Isn't that, I often wonder, 100 years ago with the Spanish flu pandemic, and after that, it seemed like when I read about it, and no one says it this way, or I haven't seen it written this way, it almost seems like the Spanish flu mutated into tuberculosis.
No, there's two different families. Nope, it did not. TB was around at that time also, but a lot of people who got influenza ended up with TB because of the fact, is because their immune system was suppressed. Actually, if you really want to kind of see a flu that is very similar, or is quote unquote flu that is similar to what we're going through today, you would really want to look up the Russian flu of 1889, I think it is.
Mm-hmm. I remember reading. I'm so paranoid about disease. I know too much about disease. I know a little bit and not enough, and it makes me not know anything.
Yeah, so the Russian flu was actually a coronavirus.
Mm-hmm.
There's lots of parallels to that story of the Russian flu to what actually is going on today.
Oh, wow.
I mean, from the face mask stuff to the deniers to everything. It's very fascinating to when you look at that flu as opposed to the one they like to talk about a lot. That flu is really interesting from how it works. So
It's interesting how they take the flu viruses and they associate them with ethnic groups. I'm just going to say.
Yeah. And so that's the reason why we stopped doing that, is because they got it wrong most of the time. So that's why we go to alphanumeric designations. So because we, you know, the Spanish flu didn't start in Spain, right? It started in the United States.
And I had the Hong Kong flu as a kid.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I remember. Oh, my gosh. That was the worst.
Yes. 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 It is. That's a tough one. Yeah.
I mean, it's funny. It's one of those things that you just never forget. You never forget. Yeah. But I survived it. I was young. Just a child. It's true. What did I know? I went out in a blizzard, caught the flu. So, okay. So what do you say in your practice to people that say, doctor, I just don't believe in vaccinations. I think this is just poisonous. I don't want it. You know, what's up with that? What do you say to them?
What I generally do is I ask them a question, okay, as to exactly why they are anti-vaccine. Is it for a religious reason? Some people are concerned about certain vaccines with regards to embryos, and I go through that. So those ultra-Christians who are concerned about embryos making the cell lines of things, and I explain to them that the cell lines that vaccines are made from actually come from three fetus lines that are actually from 1960s and 1970s, only three lines that we use medically. And the Johnson & Johnson is one of those lines that they use. The messenger RNA ones are not. So you can, if you're concerned about that, then you avoid Johnson & Johnson and you use the messenger RNA one. If your issues are that it's not effective, then we'll talk about the effectiveness, how our whole safety net that's going on currently is really truly because of vaccines. Our life expectancy is due to vaccines. The enjoyments that you have is through vaccines. So childhood illnesses, lots of things that we enjoy now is because vaccines have been around and has been highly effective. And we kind of go down what their real concerns are. I don't really try to bully anyone. I just try to just give them the information of what truly is their concern. So a lot of times their concerns is they're just mimicking what other people have said, and they really haven't sat down and really thought about it. And sometimes they're just anti-establishment. And if they're anti-establishment, I can't really do anything about.
You can't really change people.
Only thing I can say is, hey, I'm here for you. And, you know, my main goal, my concern for you is, you know, I'm going to give you my recommendation because you're the most important person sitting in this room at this moment in time. Right. So and when you're here at the doctor's office. So my job is to give you the information so that you can make your best decision.
Right.
So that's how I approach it. And I think a lot of other people do, too. So
are you seeing any emotional changes in people because of the vaccine? Because I often feel like, you know, it's I don't think I imagine I'm not alone in this. There's a feeling that you're part of a collective trauma, and it's a slow one. It's a slow one.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, you know, being part of this experience for everyone in our country, it's been traumatic. I think we all have a little PTSD from this pandemic, because it's changed how we view our standing in the world and who we are as individuals in our community.
Yeah.
And so I think sometimes it allowed people to see the world truly how it is.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of people I get pretty upset about that the way they thought the world was is not really how it is.
Yeah.
And so the pandemic has, I mean, for me personally, I knew about it, but I didn't realize when I think about last year, how many kids totally rely on lunch programs from schools.
Yeah.
I mean, that was just, I knew it, but it wasn't right there for me as an individual that, wow, the school's closed and there are literally millions of kids who won't eat.
That's right.
Because they didn't go to school.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that's crazy. I mean, and when you really think about it, it's like, wow, we're really on the edge. And if you're not there, it's sitting there looking at you, then you don't really realize it. So.
Well, there's no way you can know it if it's not presented to you, you know, and kids not eating lunch, not having lunch or not eating. I mean, that's definitely a public health emergency the way I see it.
Oh, it truly is. And there's a lot of lessons that we learn that we could learn from this pandemic as how our approaches are as a wake-up call as far as what we decide to do thereafter. And I think people are grappling with that and they're struggling because some people's view is not what's really happening.
It's the what is it, perception and reality.
Yeah.
I used to sell those two words years ago. Perception and I'll tell you that another time. Perception and reality. Perception is one thing and the reality is something else. And I guess it depends on what channel you're watching on TV.
Yeah. And that's the problem is because we're so isolated as a community that you can literally tune people out and not really understand when something astronomical happens. Well, how did that happen? Well, it's because you really weren't paying attention, right? So.
Ooh, yeah, that's true. That's what I call harsh reality.
Yeah.
Many people don't pay attention at all. So what do we do at this point going forward? I mean, what should we be prepared for? There are these variants, and I imagine there will be another vaccine round. I can't imagine that we're not going to get another shot or two.
The answer is that more, if we're going to get another shot, it's going to be a different shot. Because you want to go for that big boost of immunity.
Mm-hmm.
And so one thing nice about the coronavirus is that, you know, once you get your titers up high enough, it doesn't require super, super high titers to neutralize it.
Mm-hmm.
So that's why a lot of people are promoting this third vaccine. But the timing is key. And so we'll see.
I have a friend, I've known him since college. And he's cancer for probably the past, 5 or 6 years, you know, just keeps dealing with it. And then he caught corona and he survived it.
Sure.
I was shocked because he got the vaccine and then they won't give it to him another time because they said that his something cells, T cells? I don't know. I shouldn't.
Yes, T cells. Yeah.
We're so high that it would be ineffective. I don't really know.
Yeah, sure. So people who there is good immunological data that suggests that people who've had SARS-CoV-2 and they get the one shot, they have enough T cell response that the second shot isn't necessarily as you need to get it. There's a significant evidence that that's possible. Now, it hasn't been studied, but as a clinician and you're advising an individual patient, I could see a physician saying, hey, look, you know, you got enough going on. You already had COVID. I gave you the one shot. You have enough T cells that, you know, we're not going to have to worry about that aspect as much. And so let's concentrate on some other things. And that's that. I could say that would be a pretty reasonable clinical response to that individual circumstance. And that's not to say that's panacea for public health policy, because that's different. But yeah, I can see that for a physician to say that.
So it really explains why you really have to look at patients individually. Everybody's different. You think about the responses people had to, like, the first shot and then the second shot. You know, that was like the topic of conversation. How was the first shot? Oh, my arm was killing me. It was the worst. But then nothing. I had no symptoms. Or someone else is like, ah, it was okay. And 2 days later, I was like flat on my back for 2 days. And I could tell you the second shot I had, everybody's warning me, oh, it's going to be the worst. I took the second shot. I got to tell you, I felt like $1 million.
Yeah, I really did.
Yeah, I was ready to rock and roll. I was snapping. It was okay. You know, I almost felt like my immune system got a jump start.
And you bring up a great point is that I think people get a little confused, especially with this pandemic, is that they don't understand the difference between public health policy and the clinicians that, like Dr. Fauci, who they're great with public health policy, giving you the information, and the clinician, your doctor. And so there's a huge difference between the two with regards to recommendations, because they're going to give you a global recommendation with regards to populations and the way they're seeing things and systems and things that they have to consider. As a clinician such as myself, I'm taking all that information and then breaking it down for an individual. And so I have to weigh that individual disease and where they're at in that spectrum of public health policy. And so it's definitely different. You just have to understand that those are the differences. So when we have policies, there are policies, and then you go to your clinician and they'll look at those policies and then evaluate where you fall into that spectrum. And I think that's the best way for people to approach it. So, yeah, everyone is different. And every region is different. And it's very important that another lesson we need to learn from the pandemic is that healthcare is very, very, very regional. And a lot of the policies that were failed in 2020 were trying to nationalize things. And healthcare doesn't work that way. We're a huge country. And we're very, very different areas, very different situations. So policies have to evolve to fit those circumstances.
So globally, you really can't think 100% globally. I mean, it sounds like you can't think of yourself when it comes to COVID as just part of a global community, that it is regional, because I'm thinking about people I know that live in different places. The way that they approach it is so different.
Well, it's cultural. It's a very cultural thing. So, like, the best healthcare policy that you would say the most successful country in the world would be Vietnam.
Okay.
Be people surprised when I say that, right?
Mm-hmm.
So, Vietnam is the most successful country because they had the least number of deaths per population. They don't have a great healthcare system. They sit right next to China. And yet they did extremely well. But they're a communist country. So their policies were a lot different, right? So they locked things down real quick.
Well, you saw the video of them dragging people out.
Oh, yeah.
Kicking and screaming.
Yeah. They're not playing around. But it wasn't effective. Yes,
yes,
it was.
Now,
you think that would work well in a country that, such as the United States, with rights and freedoms? And it just won't work, right? That doesn't work. That's exactly right. And so then you take a country like Israel.
Mm-hmm.
Israel is probably the most successful country for vaccination.
Oh.
The Israel government is a small country. So, you know, and they have they're a very homogenous country. And they cut a financial deal with Pfizer, and they were able to vaccinate everybody in a tremendous stride. And so, because they got economic incentives for it. And so, you know, you just can't go like one country versus another. In Israel, when you look at studies from Israel, you have to understand and say, well, Israel, they swab everybody and test everyone. You go in the store, they swab you. Oh, let's see if you got COVID. You know, whether you're symptom or not.
Wow.
Oh, yeah. So, you know, it's a whole different way of swabbing people and testing people. And so it's a different country. And, you know, you can go down multiple different countries. But yes, we are a global community because the virus doesn't care about any of that.
That's right.
Right? It doesn't care.
It does not discriminate.
No, it does not. So it's going to do its thing. So you do have to pay attention to what other countries are doing, because what's happening in their country will eventually come to you. And so, and you as a public health person, you have to be really aware of those factors. And then you have to make policies to adapt to your system to try to prevent and to combat that. That's why they have a tremendously tough job.
Yeah.
It would be wonderful if with this thing started off and every country in the world immediately shut down like Vietnam, we wouldn't be talking about it.
What's going to happen in India? India, that's the big tragedy. That's a huge tragedy over there.
Yeah, it's terrible. I mean,
India.
It's India. You know, you've been to India, you understand. It's India. I mean, you know, India's tough. And it's a very tough situation. And I don't have any great answers to it. I think they're going to have more mutations that come out of India.
Wow.
Until they get it under control. And then it'll go down for a little while, and then it'll flare back up. So the reason why it'll go down is because they'll infect so many people, and then they'll have a little reprieve for about 6 months, and then I'll give them enough time to vaccinate themselves. Fortunately, their new vaccine that they've come out with for themselves seems to be pretty effective for the Delta variant. So we'll see what happens if they can vaccinate their people. But those are the things you just have to watch out for.
It's so ironic when I think about that, and it's so tragic when I think in New York, in the New York area, at least this is all I know to see, in the New York area, a lot of the really excellent physicians, a couple of which are my own physicians, are from India, and yet their families overseas are like dying. It just is so heartbreaking.
It is very tragic. Some of my partners are from India, and you know, one of my partners, she was just in tears. I mean, all of her uncles, like three of her uncles have died, and she couldn't go, and her mom's over. I mean, it is horrible.
There are just so many people.
Yeah, the human tragedy is awful. It's crying. It's brings you to tears.
So. Yeah, it is horrible. Give us just a little, so I want to close with this. I mean, I've taken since the beginning of COVID to walking in nature a lot, waterfront walks, the woods, and I feel like it does something for my immune system, but it definitely does something for my head. You know, a lot of people don't do anything. The average, you know, and I'm really trying to be healthy. I'm not going to say I don't have my COVID plumpness anyway, but what is the best thing a person can do, the easiest thing that they could do to keep themselves fit during this time when we can't really always feel comfortable going into a gym all the time? You know, I mean, what do you do, doctor?
Well, I am a big advocate of outdoors. So I'm a big advocate walking outside. I have two dogs, so I walk my dogs about 3 to 6 miles. So
wow, that's good.
I do that a couple times a week, and then I play golf. That's probably the best social distance game there is. I guess that's a big deal nowadays, I guess. And so I do that, and I carry my golf bag. So that's what I do. And but I do encourage people to get out there, and if you walking the woods and the forest, you know, there is a, since we're talking about immunology, there's a pretty cool study on forest. It's called forest bathing. I don't know if have you ever heard of that?
I have.
It was that, yes. And forest bathing has been shown to actually improve a person's immune status, their T cells. That's a really interesting study in Japan that was been done on that. So, but forest bathing is actually really good for your immune system besides your soul. So yeah, go for it. Go outside, walk. It's wonderful.
It's the best to walk outside. And
yes,
bathing in the forest. Let's do it.
That's right.
Yes.
That's right. That's exactly right.
It's a lot more interesting than the shower, but oh, you're the best, Bob. Thank you so much for coming on, because you know, there's always questions, you know, and I'll say that I save them up a bit. you know, because I don't want to just bombard you with a question.
Oh,
but,
no.
But no, no. But no, it's really because, you know, I'm sure you get constantly asked, like, I can imagine you can't even walk out the door if someone recognizes you as being who you are. They're like, oh, there's Dr. Clark. Let's grab him and ask him, what should we do? But anyway.
You know, the nice thing about being in Augusta is that, you know, I do have a lot of patients there. And they say, hey, Dr. Clark, you know, they'll ask me to, you know, about mainly an appointment.
There you go, so right?
Yeah, I don't get as much questions as I used to anymore because they say, I just got to make an appointment. But no, it's fine. I enjoy what I do, so.
And I'm glad that I feel reassured when I know that you're sharing the planet, that you're still on the planet with us all. No, it's a good thing. And I can always say, well, I know that guy, you know,
right.
You know, your own doctors, yeah. You rarely see, they don't really give you a lot of answers. They give you the thing, but I really appreciate that you go to the nth degree to really try to break it down because it is so difficult to understand, you know?
Yeah, it is very difficult. And you really try to just keep it in simple terms because it can get complicated then you get lost if you don't do it every day.
Yeah, I can imagine. Yes. And well, anyway, I'm looking forward to, I have a little wanderlust and I'm going to do a little traveling.
Well, come on down. You can always come down.
Okay.
You
know,
hang out.
You boost our immune system, Dr. Clark.
One of the great things is laughter is always a good medicine.
Absolutely. Absolutely. You know, and I sign me up for some more laughter and I'll send you some of my videos so you can just look at them and you need a laugh of my woodland creatures.
There you go.
You know, I'll send you some of my woodchucks and my birds mating in thin air. But it's amazing. Nature's a good thing. Nature will keep you happy. But thank you so much, Dr. Clark, for coming on. This is the best, you know, always.
Oh, it's always enjoyable.
And I'm gonna follow your advice on everything you say. I'm gonna listen to the whole thing. Yes, I advise everybody who hears this interview, save it because you might want to refer back to it, and or share it with your friends and family. Got an in here on the Energy Stoners Cafe because we have Dr. Bob Clark, Dr. Robert Clark. Thank you so much. And I'm going to say goodnight to you and to the audience. And thank you so much to coming to the Energy Stoners Cafe. Good night. Bye-bye. Thank you for listening to the Energy Stoners Cafe.